Come on aboard, I promise you. There's lots of room for you on the bandwagon.
I was just thinking to myself how nice it would be to actually have the music playing as we're starting to roll here on the bandwagon.
It would be nice.
So, but you like read my mind and provided it.
It's been going through my head this morning as I knew we were recording today, so I had the one and only Michael Stipe's sparkling tones running through my head.
You sound just like him.
I'm sure. Identical. I could fill in for Michael if they ever had a reunion tour.
So... yeah, well, we'll make a note of that. So there are a couple things I just want to mention before we get started here. First of all, I don't know if you noticed, Brian, but you and I are in the February 2016 issue of Patterns, which is Illinois Public Media's member magazine. I've had several people come up to me out in the world asking me about that. Isn't that you in the baseball hat?
Yes, what? Yes, holding the horseshoe.
That picture, that's
no,
not the
that's,
one
that's not the same picture.
That's the one on the web. They're talking about I'm holding a bat.
Okay.
I'm holding a baseball bat.
Preparing to beat me over the head with it, most likely.
I think our photographer would have enjoyed seeing that, actually. So anyway, if you want to know a little more, not just about Bandwagon, but also about the other podcasting efforts that we're putting forth here at the station, check out that article. Patterns is also online. So if you go to our website at will.illinois.edu and search for Patterns, you'll find the current issue. Also, last episode, I said we would be back the week of February 8th. That
tisk,
is not
tisk.
True.
No.
It's a lie. We're back this week. So just so everybody's, I'm sorry.
I didn't catch it either.
Yeah, well, I noticed it this morning when I was writing a couple things. So anyway, let's get started.
Yeah.
Before we get into the meat of the show, we're going to talk about a couple things that happened sort of in the interim that we don't have a lot of time to talk about, but we're going to talk about them briefly.
Yeah. We talked a lot about tennis last time in our rivalries segment. Of course,
yeah.
The first major of 2016 was the Australian Open. And after kind of running roughshod all the way to the final, Serena Williams got beat in the final.
Yes. And in the match before the final, she dropped her opponent in the first set lasted 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen her play tennis like that. It was such a dominating performance that had to have been completely demoralizing for her opponent. And then, you know, her opponent rallied again, but it was impressive and terrifying and all of those things. It's really interesting to me the way she like fires herself up on the court and she was just on fire. And then in the final, though, it was clear from the outset that Angelique Kerber, who was her opponent, she's from Germany, kind of must have like broken down some film or something, because she was really getting to her, I thought, not just mentally, but like her shot placement, all of that stuff was pretty on point.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, the Australian Open, more so than most tennis tournaments, was after my bedtime.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those late night or super early morning matches. Although I guess for some of the men's final, I probably could have watched it when I got up at 4 a.m.
They were still playing because I was accidentally awake at that time, so I checked the score. But yeah, we watched the replays, and for the women's final, I worked very hard to be unspoiled.
Yeah, very good. So yeah, that's in the books. What else is going on? Illinois men's basketball team continues to have their struggles. More guys keep getting hurt.
So what's the extent? So in last night's game against the Wisconsin Badgers, Michael Finke got an injury. They took him off the court. I didn't see what happened.
Said it was a knee-to-knee collision where he basically bumped knees with another player. And what Coach Gross said in last night's postgame press conference was that they thought it was just a contusion, meaning just a bruise.
Right.
But they were going to have an MRI today being Monday, for precautionary reasons. So that's the last thing that team needs, is another injury that keeps a guy out for a long time. They already have lost three players essentially for the season. Mike Thorne has been trying to play a little bit here and there when he can with his knee issue, but has only played once in Big Ten play. Laron Black is out, I think, for the year.
Right.
Tracy Abrams out for the year with an Achilles.
Right.
So it just keeps mounting.
The gentlemen who were calling the game last night mentioned that there were more guys in street clothes on the bench than they had like available to come in and sub. So it has not been a good season for them. And I know a lot of people in town and flung far and wide. Alumni and other fans are pretty disappointed. And as I mentioned off mic, I'm going to a game next weekend against Iowa.
Yeah,
oh,
who, at least before the polls come out later today, last I knew, Iowa was number 3 in the country. So that could be interesting.
Okay, well, I'll get myself psyched. All right, so let's, okay, we're going to move to, again, the meat of the order here. And as Brian mentioned, we have a segment about rivalry, which we started last week or last episode. And we are going to, I am going to think up a funny name for it at some point. But like right now, it's just like our segment about rivalry. So last week we talked about the Bjorn Borg and John McEnroe tennis rivalry. And this week we have what I'm going to call, because I love making puns, a dribbling rivalry.
Mm.
So go ahead.
Well, my rivalry of choice this week is one that's kind of gone dormant. But when I was growing up in the 80s, it was the rivalry in basketball. And that was Lakers Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think back on that rivalry, it was really the first pro sports rivalry I really remember getting into when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Lakers and Celtics met in the NBA Finals 3 times in 4 years between 84 and 87.
And is the fact that they met so many times why you got so into that? Why those two teams as opposed to any other pairing of teams?
Well, I became a Lakers fan just kind of in a weird way. One of those weird things that happens when you're a kid. I walked in the room. My dad had a game on. I think the Lakers were playing the 76ers or something. And the Lakers were wearing their gold jerseys.
Mm.
And they looked very similar on our sketchy reception color TV from 1983.
Mm-hmm.
Their uniforms looked very similar to the Iowa Hawkeyes, who, of course, we were an Iowa Hawkeye household growing up in eastern Iowa. And so when I looked at the TV, my first reaction, I asked my dad, is Iowa playing? And he said, no, this is the Lakers. And I said, okay. So I start watching, and I'm going to root for them because their uniforms look like Iowa. And I start watching them play, and I see Magic Johnson and James Worthy and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Byron Scott all running up and down the floor with Showtime, fast breaks, you know, just fun to watch basketball. And I was hooked. Then you have the Celtics.
Right.
Who were not your Showtime team. I mean, they were a very good team, obviously, with Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish.
And your favorite.
Danny Ainge. the player that if you were not a Celtics fan, you had to hate by rule. And they played more of a half-court style of basketball. They were more physical, more physical team than most teams in the NBA, especially compared to the Lakers, who wanted to run up and down the floor as much as possible. So you just had a contrast in styles. You had kind of the old rivalry that went back to the 60s, and I didn't really realize this when I started following it, but the Lakers and Celtics met in the NBA Finals 7 times. Between 1959 and 69, the Celtics won all 7 of those.
Wow, I did not know.
Yeah, so when they met in 84 in the finals, it was a really big deal. And the Celtics won again in 7 games, mm-hmm. with Game 7 being at the Boston Garden.
Right.
And so it was the old, well, the Lakers just can't beat the Celtics, especially in Boston Garden. They just can't beat them.
Mm.
So then the next year, 85, Lakers come back, win the series in the finals, beat the Celtics in 6 games. And as I recall, I'm pretty sure that Game 6 was actually played in the Boston Garden.
Mm.
And the Lakers won that series there, kind of broke all those curses,
right,
et cetera,
right.
et cetera. And then the Lakers won again when they met in 2 years.
So here's a question for you. How did the media help that rivalry along? Do you feel like the commentators helped that along, or were those games advertised as being like these showdown, blowout, crazy rivalry? We got the blue collar team over here and the Los Angeles like fancy people over here. How did the media contribute?
Well,
to that?
I mean, it was definitely a big deal. At that point in time, the NBA, like most things, it was basically on the major networks. It was CBS had the games. So if you were lucky, you got to see one NBA game a week during the regular season, if that. And then once you got into the playoffs, you might see a few more games here and there. But when it was Lakers-Celtics, I mean, they were definitely playing up the contrasts and styles.
Mm-hmm.
They were definitely playing up And again, they were playing up that Lakers-Celtics rivalry because it went back into the 60s, and you had some guys involved with the teams who were now on the sidelines. As I recall, when the Celtics were during those years, they had Casey Jones was their head coach,
mm-hmm.
and he was a player for the Celtics back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers, Pat Riley was their coach, and he came along
that's right.
kind of at the end of that era. I think he was playing for the Lakers maybe in the late 60s, maybe was on the team for one or two of those finals appearances in the late 60s for the Lakers. And then to add to that, on the broadcasts, the color guy was Tom Heinsohn, who I think still might do color commentary for the Celtics for their local broadcasts. And despite the fact that Heinsohn was a former Celtic, I enjoyed listening to his commentary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I felt like he did a pretty good job of not letting his, you know, Boston Green come out too much on those broadcasts.
So is there a comparable rivalry today? I think the game, so I watched some clips.
Mm-hmm.
And it did bring back memories because we did have those games on. I may not have necessarily had a dog in that hunt, but I remember watching those games. And I have a lot of thoughts on how different the game is. And I told you about a tweet I ran across by Chuck D of mm-hmm. Public Enemy.
Yeah.
Who the actual tweet says, "I've been watching 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s games all day. Then tonight's games, which look like the Indy 500. Nobody making contact anywhere. LOL." And I do think it's a completely different game. There's way more outside shooting. The game is much more, the bodies are bigger. I just wonder if they're being more careful. Do you think the difference in the game has affected our ability to have rivalries, or is it social media? What is it?
I think the biggest thing is that it's rare. I think really the San Antonio Spurs is maybe one of the few examples of this, where you have teams whose nucleus stays together for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Spurs have been Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili now for the last 5-6 years,
right.
pretty steadily,
right.
if even longer. That's rare. You have, you know, LeBron James signed with Miami, was there for a few years,
mm-hmm.
back to Cleveland. The guys around him kind of keep changing. You think about some of the other prominent teams, maybe Golden State will stick around in their current form for a little while. You know, they're defending NBA champs. They've got a fairly young nucleus. That
mm-hmm,
that team
mm-hmm.
could stay together for a little while. But that's becoming more of a rarity. You get teams who kind of are assembled, do well, and then a couple of those guys go to free agency, can get more money elsewhere, so they leave for that. Whereas really, those Lakers and Celtics teams were a lot of the same guys for pretty much the entire decade of the 80s,
yeah.
from when Magic and Bird came into the NBA, I think in the 1980 season, really until their careers ended in the early 90s, the nucleus of those teams was pretty consistent, and that's a very rare thing now.
When you say early 90s, I'm like, well, that wasn't that long ago, and then I think, wait a minute, that was like more than 20 years
mm-hmm.
ago. Whoops.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this for the dribbling rivalry segment of our our program. Thank you, Brian. I will be bringing a rivalry in next week.
Look forward to it.
So, this was great. And we'll in the show notes, we'll have some links to clips of Boston Lakers games from the 80s.
You know I'm going to link to Magic hitting the hook shot to beat the Celtics in game one of the finals.
Well,
you know that's coming.
I'm surprised that's not like a GIF in your signature file or something. So
these are the hot shooters for the Lakers. Tommy, in the last few minutes, Kareem has missed two free throws and Michael Thompson one. Untimely free throws that could have changed the complexion of this one.
You're right there, Dick, but right now the Celtics are faced with a real problem, Nate. The versatility of the Lakers' half-court offense really has them guessing as to who might get the ball. Kareem is a great option. James Worthy or Magic Johnson in the low post being guarded by Dennis Johnson.
And Byron Scott is in the ball game now. 5 seconds to go. Magic with a hook shot. Scores with two. And the Celtics trail by one with 2 seconds to go.
Anyway, thank you, Brian, for bringing that up. Now we're going to move on, take a few minutes to talk about the emergence of women in positions of leadership mm-hmm. in big-time sports. So, Brian, why don't you talk a little bit about Catherine Miller?
Catherine Smith.
Smith. Why do I keep wanting to call her Miller?
I don't know. I'm not
sure.
It's
like the second time in 20 minutes. Okay.
That's all right.
Take it.
But she became the first female full-time coach. The Buffalo Bills hired her as a special teams quality control coach, and she'd been in the NFL for a while, She was an assistant to head coach Rex Ryan this past season, and then she worked for 12 years with the Jets before that, including 6 years under Rex Ryan when he was the coach of the Jets. So mm-hmm. she's been in the NFL a mm-hmm. long time, and now she gets to be a full-time coach, and basically looks like she's going to really be in charge of just special teams, making sure that everything is executed well on special teams. And I'll be curious to see how this goes.
Yeah, one thing that I thought was interesting in the NPR story that was about her, and we'll link to that for sure. And Ari Shapiro was, I believe, hosting All Things Considered that day, and he referred to her in his intro as an administrative assistant. So I'm reading this. I'm a person who doesn't really know that much about sports or has no context for what this is. And I'm thinking, how did somebody who functions as a, quote, secretary get into this job? Mm-hmm. Well, it was special teams. So maybe, no, not to rip on special teams. But, and then, of course, you get further into the transcript of the piece and it's made perfectly clear where she's coming from. And I'm very interested in women being these boots on the ground, these coaches of these teams, football, basketball, soccer. You don't see a lot of, at least in soccer, you see no women at all in the men's game. Mm-hmm. A few women in the women's game, but a lot of guys in the men's game, officiating kind of the same thing. So I'm very interested to see if there are more coming, if she can speak to more coming up behind her. She's a little bit of an anomaly, and in that piece they kind of make it clear that they're not exactly sure what this means for women in football. The other person that we're going to mention here is, last night when I was watching the Illini play the Badgers, I noticed that their director of basketball operations at the University of Wisconsin is a woman named Kat Vosters. And this mm-hmm. article says, Kat Vosters grew up in Wisconsin, graduated from the University of Wisconsin, has been a Badgers fan since basically birth, and even used to have a little Badgers cheerleading costume when she was a kid.
Uh-huh.
So let's hope that all those cheerleading costumes end up in the front office, in leadership positions. I didn't know that much about her. But basically, the person who is the director of basketball operations oversees every aspect of that program.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's they're not necessarily an on-court assistant coach, meaning they don't really have direct contact with the players and stuff that much in practice. But what they do, and they can't do recruiting off campus. They can't do that. But they are basically in charge of a lot of stuff. I mean, it's a pretty important role. Charting all sorts of stats, working on film, setting up a lot of trips for recruits coming on campus and for coaches when they go off campus to recruit, setting up all that kind of stuff. There's a lot going on with the director of basketball ops position. And in a lot of cases, that position ends up being kind of a stepping stone from there to a full-time assistant coach position. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. the way it's been used a lot of times in the past.
Mm-hmm. There aren't very many women in Division I schools doing this job. It says here in this article, Kirsten Green at Harvard and Cree Warkentien at UNLV.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I think it's interesting also to sort of see that job. It's a little bit different to me than being a coach. You said it's a stepping stone to a coaching job, but I actually see being able to deal with all of that behind the scenes stuff and manage the program it can also be a stepping stone, I think, into more of a management position.
Administration.
Administration,
yeah.
Pro team, where, mm-hmm. again, that's not a world where you see a lot of women in sports kind of ruling the roost. So I did not know that she was doing that job, and she was there and she was rocking it out.
One other woman we need to mention who's actually a full-time assistant coach in the NBA is Becky Hammon.
That's right.
I was just, when we were talking about that, her name, I immediately remembered, yes, the Spurs have an assistant coach who's a woman. And yes, she's the first full-time assistant coach in NBA history. She coached the Spurs summer league team. She mm-hmm. was the head coach of that team last summer, and they won the championship, which was cool to see. She had a very good college career, a long WNBA playing career, and then got into coaching. And while she was rehabbing from an injury a couple years ago, she went to the Spurs practices, and basically Greg Popovich, the head coach, asked for her input in a lot of things. Say, hey, what do you think about this? What should we do here? What do you see when they're watching film?
Right.
And from there, turn that into an assistant coaching spot.
Which is amazing. And also, you know, hats off to him for just recognizing a great basketball mind where it was and not being like, oh, God, now I have to, you know, it's a woman and now what? What do I do? You know, I think we've come a long way. And I think we are going to see more women in positions of power, both on the court or on the field, and also more behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to that.
Absolutely.
So should we talk about our next thing?
Yeah.
This is a total, it's very near and dear to my heart in the last 10 days. So this is not, so when I was in eighth grade, we had Christmas and my parents got us a ping pong table. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I did not, and we put it in the basement and it was very cold that winter. I lived in Minnesota. And one thing I did not know about my dad is that he was a bit of a ping pong shark.
Oh.
He was very good. He, for whatever reason, took great joy in like beating the crap out of us regularly. I guess maybe he thought that was how we were going to learn. I was like 13. My brother was 9. And, but he taught me how to serve and how to put spin on the ball and how to do all things. So we kind of whiled away a lot of hours in that very cold winter. I don't think the snow went away until April that year. But so I've always been kind of fascinated by ping pong. If you've ever watched ping pong at the non-basement level, it is a really quite athletic and fast and kind of crazy game. Again, until 10 days ago, never occurred to me to like go try to watch it. But my husband and I were flipping through our over-the-top devices sports channels, and we happened across the World Championship of ping pong.
Yes.
And it was quite a match. Did you go to the website or see anything?
Yeah, you sent me a link and I watched a little bit there. It is crazy intense.
It is really intense, and like each player. So we watched the final. The final was between this gentleman named Andrew Bagley from the UK and his opponent was Maxim Shmyrov from Russia. Mm-hmm. And each of them had their own little rituals. It was very showbiz in this weird way. I mean, but then once they started playing, you were like, okay, this is not all about like the blowing on the hand and the saying of the prayer before hitting the ball. I mean, it was like once it got going, it was, you know, anytime there was a rally more than five, you know, of five times over the net, it was like, wow, that went on forever. But it was super intense. There was a crowd of almost 1,000 people there to watch them. There were like lights everywhere, you know, like when they introduce basketball teams and they have all these laser lights and stuff. They had stuff like that. You know, it's referred to on the website as a blood and thunder affair. That's a quote.
Blood and thunder.
Yeah. So when we first started watching, our mouths were kind of open. Like, I think I said to Jim, this seems like something ripe for the Will Ferrell treatment, kind of like ice skating was for Blades of Glory. Wasn't that the movie?
Yeah.
So, but then the more we started watching, the more intense it was, the more athletic, the more sporty they were into it. And also, I know that I would never, you could pay me a lot of money and I still would not stand on the receiving end of one of those smashes.
No.
No way. And they move around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and Jim said he's like, is the table smaller? Jim's my husband. Is the table smaller? I said, no, I think it's because they sort of, you know, like make themselves big back there and run around that they make, you know, we didn't have that much room in our basement.
Right.
To
yeah.
Run around,
yeah.
Know?
You basically had a little bit more than the width of the table and maybe a few feet behind.
Right.
You
more often than not, the ball would hit the wall behind us, you know? And so, so there was no smashing. You know,
right.
These guys, they're like getting way behind the table and they're winding up and hitting the ball. But my favorite part was in the post-game interview. I love this. The post-game interview, they're trying to make it like super professional sportsy, which it is. And all this confetti had rained down on the winner, Mr. Bagley. Spoiler alert. Sorry. And and a piece had stuck to his face and no one had told him. So they're having this interview and every time he would turn his head, you would see this piece of confetti stuck to his face. The other thing that I really loved is that they had, you know how all the pro teams and many college teams now have those intense montages, like their players like mm-hmm. crossing their arms. They had one for the ping pong. And if I can find it, we'll put it in the show notes because
Heck yes.
It was awesome. And it was clear these guys had played each other before. There was a bit of a rivalry going on there. But I just want to encourage people to look at sports like ping pong, which we look at as recreation or something funny. There have been movies made about ping pong. There have not just documentaries, but actual films about those. And we can put those in the show notes, too. It was just really kind of eye-opening for me about how into people can get into sports that we may write off as just basement entertainment.
Yeah, it's and the cool thing now is, for instance, you were able to watch the finals, the world championships, on ESPN3. So that's very cool. So check that out. As Lisa said, we'll put a bunch more in the show notes here. And I think with that, Lisa, we'll have to bid everyone adieu.
Is it time?
It is.
It's time. All right. Well, thank you for joining us today on The Bandwagon, where, in case you've forgotten, there's plenty of room for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So are you going to start singing? Don't start singing.
No, not yet.
Bandwagon is produced by us. I'm Lisa Braltz, and
I'm Brian Moldine.
Brian records us and edits us and puts us on the web, and I handle a lot of our pre-production. You can email us if you want to know what all of that means. Scott Cameron is WILL's Director of News and Public Affairs, and this podcast is really all his fault, so we hope he's happy.
Mm-hmm.
Those hilarious photos of us on the website and in our member magazine patterns, those were taken by Mike Thomas, not the former U of I athletic director, but Illinois Public Media's art director.
Mm-hmm.
We'll note there. Our theme song is by those rockers from Athens, G-A-R-E-M. Jim Kelly thought we should use it, so we're using it. You can locate past episodes of Bandwagon at will.illinois.edu. as well as links to the articles we discussed and some show notes and some YouTube videos, I think, this time.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love your feedback via email, or if you'd prefer to start a conversation online, go ahead and ping us on Twitter at
BMoline, W-I-L-L.
And or at Lisa Braltz. The next episode of Bandwagon is coming your way, we promise, the week of February 16th. I have it right this time. We might, maybe, possibly have a webpage by then.
Ooh.
So we'll see. But in any event, thank you so much for listening.
Catch you later.